Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. Governor Pat McCrory gave his second State of the State speech to the General Assembly this week, proposing bond issues for highway funding and renovations of state buildings, and calling for a new economic incentive program. McCrory claimed credit for the state's falling unemployment rate and proposed two new cabinet agencies, one for information technology and one for military affairs. Here to talk about McCrory's speech, what it means for the legislative session, and his reelection bid is political scientist Michael Bitzer from Catawba College. Dr. Bitzer, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
I want to ask you some about the details of Governor McCrory's State of the State, but let's start with your overall impressions of his address and the various reactions that you've seen.
It almost seemed like Christmas in February. It was a very typical State of the State address for most governors, a long wish list of agenda policies. The governor was very clear on the five key areas. I thought, you know, everybody could agree that certainly jobs and education and healthcare and public safety and connectivity and government efficiencies, those are all great and wonderful general policy areas. What really surprised me was at times the lack of specifics and other times the actual specifics. The thing that really stuck out to me was not only one but two bond issues that he wants to do. That's going to be interesting to see how that fits into the budget. But then also the call for the increase in teacher pay base raises, but then nothing really about senior teachers, advanced teachers, teachers that have been there for a long time. So it was both specific and very vague at times, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what kind of legislative packages he puts out and the devils that are in the details there.
Yeah, it was interesting that, as you mentioned, there were some almost excruciatingly long details and then some areas where he didn't have many at all. What about the one critique I've seen is that it's interesting that a governor from a party that prides itself on smaller government and so forth wants to borrow up to $2.5 billion and create two new cabinet agencies.
It really was. That was one of the more shocking things I think people weren't really expecting. I think people were expecting the infrastructure, the roads, the bridges kind of bond issue. But then again, he added on top of that the bond issue for rehabilitating old buildings and then also the creation of the two new government agencies. Certainly, we would not attribute that to a typical Republican governor, but maybe he is trying to branch out and establish some differences with the more conservative wing of his party. Certainly, I don't think anybody could fault the issue of military and veterans affairs being a government agency, and the need for technology and information technology certainly is a critical need across the board. We are in an information technology age, but to hear that coming out of a Republican governor's mouth probably raised a few more eyebrows than people were expecting.
He also made sort of an oblique reference to Medicaid expansion. He talked about Medicaid reform, and then he talked about a way to help our poor low-income citizens. I can't remember exact words he used. It would be a North Carolina plan.
Yeah.
I guess, A, what did you make of that? And then, B, Senator Berger and others have immediately restated their opposition to doing anything to expand Medicaid.
It really was. You're seeing this trend across the country in states like Wyoming, I believe Idaho, most recently Tennessee, that Republican governors are trying to find ways to craft Medicaid expansion without the stigma and the attachment of Obamacare to it. Now, what has happened in Tennessee just recently is the governor came out with this, what he called Tennessee's approach to this issue. And what I think may happen here in North Carolina happened in Tennessee. The state Senate committee basically blocked the measure from moving forward. So there is still real issues of differences between the governor and the more conservative state Senate. That's going to flare up on that issue. There are probably going to be flare-ups on the bonds issues as well. So I think, you know, the relationship still is not where the governor would like to see it, but perhaps he's using them as a foil for any potential reelection bid to say, I'm not as conservative as those folks under the leadership of President Pro Tem Berger, and I do want to make some changes and hopefully expand the opportunities for health care. He kind of framed it in football language, but you always have to remember, just to the Super Bowl, if you throw it for that 1 yard pass to score the touchdown, you could be intercepted, and the state Senate may be that interception line.
It's interesting. I guess he made a political choice, obviously. The other past governors and presidents, whether regardless of who's controlling the legislative body, occasionally will acknowledge the opposition in the chamber and try to convince them in the speech, or call to the public to help convince them. But it really was, as you mentioned, it was more of a laundry list. It wasn't as if he's lobbying heavily for these items.
I think what he was doing was setting out the markers for certainly a reelection bid, but also to kind of have that list of, here's what I want to accomplish because here's what I envision North Carolina being over the next 2 years, maybe, you know, in a second term. I think certainly the numbers in the legislature just don't dictate that Democrats are going to have that much influence because of the supermajorities in both chambers. But certainly, I think, you know, if the governor can reach out, perhaps there could be some, you know, creative coalitions built, but certainly it is going to be a party amongst the Republicans to determine what is going to pass in both chambers.
You mentioned he restated the commitment to raise the teacher base pay or starting teacher pay to $35,000. Were you surprised that, I mean, he talked a little bit about testing and a little bit about certification, but there wasn't much else about education. There was nothing, as you mentioned, about veteran teachers or textbooks or class size or teacher assistance. And during the last budget debate, he was pretty exercised about some of the planned cuts to those areas.
He certainly was, and I think that was one of the notable areas, you know, particularly the use of technology in the classroom. He talked about Wi-Fis and making sure everybody is connected, but I think that there has to be this recognition that indeed North Carolina's education system, not just K through 12, but also we're talking about higher education. He made specific mentions about the universities, but you've also got at the same time the issue of Republican allies pushing out Tom Ross as president of the system. I think, you know, there's going to require some delicate public relations finessing in terms of he wants to exploit and utilize and promote where the universities are and what they can do for job creation. But again, the cuts that have gone into education as well as higher education are really going to be, you know, something that the budget is going to have to be the primary battle over in the next few weeks.
You mentioned a couple times that this is you have to put this in the context of his 2016 reelection bid. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, a lot of people aren't like us. They don't watch an hour and 20-minute State of the State speech. What role does this play in the grander political narrative? And is it, you know, obviously most people know about the speech from people like us talking about it or reading about it in the newspaper, or seeing TV stories. Well, how do you put this in some kind of context for average folks?
I think generally every 2 years we start a whole new campaign cycle. Certainly they start the day after the winner is already announced and elected. But I think this is really the beginning of the true campaign cycle going into 2016. And I think Pat McCrory kind of laid out where the state has been over the past 2 years in the early part of the speech, noting that unemployment has dropped and areas such as tax reform has also been implemented. But he's also looking forward, and I think he's setting out what he wants as an agenda. And what will be interesting is to see the reaction, particularly by presumptive Democratic contender Roy Cooper, how he responds with all of these policy areas. You know, we generally talk about campaigns devolving into personality clashes. What this may be is a signal that indeed it is going to be a rich policy discussion on very partisan terms, and I think this is kind of the opening salvo. Certainly the legislature is going to have a major role in how Pat McCrory has to frame things as he goes out on the campaign stump and how he's presenting these issues. But I think it's the beginning of what will be a very vigorous campaign fight leading into 2016.
Well, it's fascinating. As always, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure, as always.
Up next, a former state education official talks about why he's trying to stop the state school voucher program. Stay with us.